Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another podcast of I Do, I Did, I Don't. I'm Lori Wood, here with my co-host and partner in crime, Steve Fatula from McCoy Fatula. And we're here just to spend another morning with you.
And good morning, everyone. We are here to talk about Lori. She doesn't want to do this. She's been delaying pushing this button for a long time.
I have, and I don't know why. I am much better, and I'd love to find out about people.
Yep. And today we're doing that.
Today we're doing it about me.
Yeah.
So here we go, I guess.
So I have my questions.
Good, because that will help down. Me.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first one we want to know is, who is Lori Wood? What do you like, and how did we kind of get our paths to cross?
Okay. So I have two beautiful grandchildren. Family is very important to me. I had this amazing mother who made everything fun, her imagination and her stories. We just laughed all the time. And my daughter remembers my mom reading to her fairy tales, and she'd start the book off right. Mm-hmm. But then she'd just go in her own direction. And there was like rainbow colored cows with shoes when there was no rainbow colored cow with shoes in the book. And she just had this beautiful soul and wonderfully imaginative, hysterical mind. And so my daughter has these great memories. And to me, I love spending time with my grandbabies and trying to create those kind of memories. It's one of my favorite things to watch them grow.
Nice.
And just have that kind of playful time. Because in life as adults, we don't get to be that playful. So I like that. I like to exercise. It's a love-hate relationship, but it makes me mentally happy.
Mm-hmm.
I love to golf. Not very good at it. I use not swear words, but golf words a lot. And I love music and dancing. I always wanted to be a dancer. Mm-hmm. Just didn't work out. So in my next life, I'll come back as, you know, a showgirl in Vegas or something
okay,
like that.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
And then you say exercise, but exercise is like a limitation there. So you're training for more than just exercise purposes.
Yes. Yeah, so in my I've always had, you know, as women, I think we have body issues. And I've always loved food, and I grew up a little shorter and not stockier, but I have this really long and lean sister, and we were always compared.
Okay.
And so it was something I was very aware of. And one day I just thought, I'm going to do something about it, because you can either sit and worry about it and piss and moan, or you could do something about it.
Sure.
So I started walking, or, you know, at that time, I think it was step aerobics and just trying to get into anything active. And I fell in love with how it made me feel. So I then went on to weight training, and I've just been doing it since about 21 years old. I love the weight training. I used to do hot yoga 5 times a week, sometimes twice a day, which was a 3-hour commitment. I just kind of am obsessed with it. And at 53, I did my first natural bodybuilding fitness competition, and that was really cool. I had kind of gotten away from exercise, lost my parents, got a little lost and depressed. And I thought, again, you can either sit here like this and maybe change your clothes out for moo-moos if you keep going this direction, or get off your tuchus and do something. And so I just realized how much I love crossing that stage and how cool it felt to do the work to get there. So now this year, my goal is to do it again and not be better than the other competitors, but be better than I was.
Okay.
So compete with myself. So it's a little, it's exciting, it's isolating, and it makes you hangry. Well, I was a little hangry yesterday.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. You are now stuck on a very consistent diet.
Yeah.
Every day seems to be the same food.
It is. And the hardest part, I think, for me is the evenings.
Yeah.
Because like between 8 and 10, that's when I want the snack. And sometimes my brain and my body are two different things. Like my brain will be like, don't do it. You don't need it. And then I'll find my body walking into the kitchen. And I'm like, no. So it's a struggle. And then, of course, everything on TV is food commercials or medication.
Yeah,
and that's maybe fair. I should be medicated right now because I can't eat. So I don't know.
No, no, that's fair.
But it's tough.
And then that transitions you to constant competition. Wanting to always be better for yourself.
Yes.
But then what got you involved with people and law and helping with people going through these kind of situations and coaching? How did that kind of transform your career?
way back, I always knew I wanted to be a worker bee. I never was the girl that dreamed about getting married or having kids.
Okay.
And I always knew it was either in the legal field or I thought I wanted to be a psychiatrist. My parents were discouraging that because they're like, you're very empathetic. You take on everybody's problems. You spend a day doing that with people. You're going to go nuts. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, the person who never dreamed of getting married decided she knew everything at 17 when she graduated and got married and pissed my father off and had a baby the following year. And so then I thought, okay, go in a different direction in life. And then my husband, and truth be told, even if he was a good guy, I had no idea what being a wife meant or how to do it at 17. So it was destined to fail.
Yeah.
It just was, whether he had an active role in it or not. But he decided when our daughter was born, he just didn't want to work again.
Oh.
And so that was interesting. So 6 weeks after our daughter was born, I went back to work and then it was survival mode. And I always knew I wanted to be in the legal field. So that's the route I took. And I started out in a civil law firm and it was fine. I was learning and I didn't mind it. And one day I was driving by a building, didn't know what was inside, what kind of business. And I thought that would be a really cool place to work. Fast forward a year and I was working there and it was a family law firm. And I don't even know how that happened, but that's happened to me a couple times in my life. And I just loved family law. It was really hard for the first 6 months because I didn't get it. It didn't click. I'd get all my documents back with big red writing all over it. It looked like a crime scene happened. And then at the 6th month window, my boss called me in and I thought she was going to fire me. And she's like, it finally clicked. I wasn't sure about you, but your work is, you got it. And it's phenomenal. And I would lead settlement conferences with attorneys and get the clients ready. And she let me do a lot of things I probably shouldn't have done. But it was amazing. And the part I loved the most was the people.
Yeah.
They're at the worst time, one of the worst times in their life. It is almost like a death.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's not their choice and their whole world's been torn upside down. And if you can help somebody through that and make them feel a little bit better or feel supported or safe, it's a great thing. It's a selfish thing because that's what fed me. So I did that I worked for other people till maybe 2006. And then I decided to just do it on my own and opened up my business from 2007 to, well, right before I came over here.
Yeah.
And decided I went to a year of law school because it's what I thought was supposed to happen. And during that year, my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time. My stepdad, a brain tumor, and my mother-in-law, not the 17-year-old marriage, I did get married again to a very nice man, lung cancer. And I was working a full-time job, raising a teenager, going to law school and dealing with that.
It's too much.
Something had to give. Yeah. And that was law school. And I decided I didn't want to be contentious. I didn't need to be in the courtroom. So instead, after getting everybody through their things, I went the mediator route.
Okay.
And that just fits me better.
And coaching then became the next natural progression.
I think I've always done coaching. I just didn't have a title. I coached the divorce clients. I coached the mediation clients. I coached my family. My father relied on me quite heavily, right or wrong, when my parents divorced. I'd spend every evening talking to him. So I think I was born to do it. And after 30 years of paperwork, it was the people part that I wasn't burned out on, but the paperwork and all of that stuff, I just wanted to just be there to support people full time. And then one day I was at my office and I was thinking about making these changes probably a year before. I got an email from one of your staff members saying, hey, saw your resume. And I'm thinking, how? I haven't posted one in 17 years, which I thought was just weird.
That is weird.
And she's like, we'd really like to consider you for a position. Would you be worth talking? And I'm one that never turns down an opportunity to meet people. And I came over here and here we are.
And then we've thrown you in 1,000 different
yes
loops, paths. and whatnot to get us back to this point.
Yeah, I was hired for one thing and there was a need elsewhere. And as with anything else, it's just, I mean, I'm happy to fill it. I'm a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And the first role was to help a new attorney.
Yeah.
And I loved that. And he was a tough one. I really still like him to this day, but yeah. He would hang on every word. And I was worried about that because I wanted him to think and do for himself and then just ask me. But it was fun brainstorming with him and it was fun working that angle. That's the piece I like.
Yeah, it's a new attorneys are neat.
Yeah.
You get to see how people think, but then you also get to see which ones will make it in family law. And which ones are not designed for family law.
Family law is tough. You either love it and you will stay in it for the duration, or you hate it and you want out screaming. And there are those who hate it and stay in it because they feel that that's, you know, they're settled and whatever, but then they're miserable.
Yep.
Family law is definitely a choice.
Family law is a tough choice too.
Really tough choice. Yep. You have to really like people.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, not everybody likes people as much as I do, but you also have to be empathetic and it's just, you have to be prepared to listen to people's emotions because it's not just about the legality. Emotions are 80%, if not more.
I would say that's this area.
Yeah.
It's law is there, but emotions trump law almost every time.
100%. That's why I think that coaching for family law is just such an integral part because it shouldn't be the attorney's time to listen to those emotions. Then the client doesn't hear the legal strategy or the answers. Mm-hmm. They just hear the emotions. So if we can separate those and have two different outlets, I just think it's a much better service for everybody.
I would agree 100%. I mean, in the coaching itself, how do you structure what that looks like for someone that's never thought about it, or maybe they thought about it, but don't really know what it means. How do you explain it to somebody like that? How does it help them?
So I think that's really interesting because most people, if you say you're a coach, they have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
Mediation feels very natural for me to say I'm a mediator, but coaching just seems like maybe too broad, or what the heck does that mean? Not defined. So when people ask me about it and they say, well, what differentiates that from counseling or a psychiatrist? Well, a lot of times they spend time looking back. How'd you get here? What happened with your parents? What happened when you were kids? I don't do any of that. It's we're here now. I help them find the tools to move forward from the situation they're in. And it's not me just listening to the complaints or the emotions or that. We find active ways. We do that, but we find active tools on progressing. So it's really teaching them how to, number one, recognize and acknowledge where they are and move forward.
So you would work well with the therapist in conjunction. They would have both.
100%.
One's helping one way, one's helping the other, and that gives somebody really the best push forward.
Right. And if a client has that need and coaching's not going to be beneficial maybe at this time, I've just referred them out. It's got to be something because I'm not telling them what to do.
Sure.
I'm not giving them answers. Sometimes I have to sit on my hands because it's very clear to me, but it's their path. So I just try and ask the right questions to get them to figure it out. And a lot of times we'll start the conversation and they feel like it's going to go in one direction. And by the time the hour's up, they've gone in a completely different direction they didn't even know needed to talk about. So it's very interesting.
With your appointments and things, do you have set times to tend to work, like 10-minute blocks, hour blocks? What's a normal thing for somebody, again, thinking about this?
Most of the time, you know, we do an initial 30 minutes just to get the feel and explain and make sure that I'm the right fit for them. I think much like an attorney, you have to be comfortable. It's a big deal. You not got to trust the person you're working with. But typically, it's a 50-minute talk. Whether that's Zoom, in person, which I tend to prefer. And that time goes by really fast. But I have also had, you know, people that only have a 30-minute lunch and need the time. So I'll do whatever the client needs or works for them. I'm not set. We've done evenings. We've done weekends. It's really more about the client's schedule than mine.
And we have talked with you and I have talked about these things before. it's not just divorce, though. Divorce tends to be the one that opens the door to the conversation.
Correct.
You've worked with people for years beyond the divorce.
100%. So I went through, as we all do, a lot of traumatic things. And I found myself suffering from anxiety. And I didn't even know what it was. I went to the hospital, thought I was having a heart attack.
Okay.
And I was told, no, you just have anxiety. I'm thinking, what the hell is that? Never even occurred to me. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, because I had such a wonderful, supportive family who thought they were helping, I was getting debilitated. There was a time period that I couldn't drive myself in a car.
Wow.
There was a small time period that I wouldn't even leave the house. And that's just not me. So it took a lot of work to get past it. And now, I mean, I'm almost fearless.
Can I press on that?
Oh, press on anything you want.
For those that don't know, Lori, fearless, you saying it, is very much you're outwards and there's nothing that overwhelms you and you're able to do anything. What put you, that kind of a mindset, what put you in that bubble, in that problem spot?
So I found out that it was, you know, depression and anxiety is something that kind of runs in our family.
Okay.
And it was just, there was some domestic violence.
Okay.
There was a one-time incident because I left that day,
mm-hmm.
Took my daughter and we bailed. And then I had contracted meningitis and almost died.
Okay.
In fact, I hadn't made it to the hospital. I wouldn't be here today.
Wow.
I had set up an apartment all from out of town to relocate with my daughter. I got there and it was full of cockroaches. And I mean, so I'm driving around in a U-Haul with my daughter trying to figure out where we're going to live.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a series of certainly survivable, but a really rough period of life where at my age, because I was quite young, mm-hmm. I was late 20s. It was a lot for a kid. And to me, that's a kid.
Sure.
To take all at once.
It's
and
fair.
So trying to survive and provide for my daughter on my own and just not let her see me break, I think broke me a little.
Fair. But so, I mean, that, and that's what you see with a lot of your clients.
100%.
Them going through very similar, the world's okay, and then the world's not. And it's overwhelming. One thing's okay. Two things sucks a little bit. Three things suck a little more. And for whatever reason, we run into people that, you know, all the dominoes have fallen at all times.
And it just happens out of nowhere. And for me, my life's role has been spent making sure people are okay. That's not something that I put upon myself, but it was what role, even I'm the baby of four kids.
Mm-hmm.
I would be the one, if we're at a restaurant, Lori, your sister needs something, take care of it. Lori, your sister wants this, go get it. We'd get in a fight, Lori, be the bigger person, just apologize. I know you're right, don't worry about it. My dad, who I also lost to, was just this incredible, strong, bigger, larger than life man to me, but as it turns out, was just really insecure. There was a lot of physical abuse when he was growing up. I mean, butcher knives, really bad stuff that he never shared till later. And when my mom and he divorced because he thought the sun set on her head, he just was so broken.
Mm.
And so he would come home from work and he was a great provider and he would sit on the bar stool and he would sit me next to him and he would just cry, why is this happening? And he would drink. And I would sit with him and talk to him until he went to bed for probably 6 months to a year. And my mom wasn't there because she had left to get breast cancer treatment for the first time. She just left us with my dad while she could get medical help. I just didn't know. And as it turns out, you know, everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't have had to do that as a child. As it turns out, when my father got Alzheimer's and he was struggling you know, Alzheimer's is terrible because they don't know who you are or their mind is not the same. If he was getting agitated, if he was about to get violent, if he was really struggling, his wife would say, call your daughter. And out of four kids, he'd dial my number and I could calm him down. And I was honored to be that person for him kind of during his life and at the end. So I don't regret any of it. But it's amazing. Made me feel responsible to make sure that my people are okay in life. And so when the break happened to me, it's much easier for me to care for others.
Yeah.
When the break happened to me, I didn't know how to, and I didn't feel like there was anybody to make it okay. Because I'm the one that makes it okay.
Sure.
So.
Well, let's.
End.
Well, let's end on an open question.
Yes.
Right. So self-care, mental health, whatever we want to call it, is important.
100%.
Right. And you're explaining things to people that are going through much the same as what you've described to sure. some degree. More or less, left, right, yeah. whatever it is. What do you recommend for self-care? And then how do you actually do self-care? What does that mean to you?
So it's easier to start with self-care. The gym or working out at home or going for a walk or anything moving my body.
Okay, exercise is
Exercise is huge because even if you start exercise mad, you don't stay mad. Even how hard you try, you're less than.
Okay.
Your emotions are different. Something happens to your body where it's a little bit better. So for me, that's very helpful.
Okay.
I am kind of a person that likes to have a moment by myself. I need my space. It's probably because I'm talking or helping or, you know, and happy to do so. But if I can listen to music for 30 minutes alone or zone out to a really stupid TV show where I don't have to think for 30 minutes and not speak to anybody or talk on the phone, then I come back a little bit better.
Okay.
Those are the things that work for me. And it took me a while to kind of figure out what works. And sometimes I'm not great at it. Mm. Life is busy. I would say for self-care, number one, it's finding the time to do something for yourself is the step one.
Forcing it.
You have to brush your teeth every day. You have to get up for work every day. You have to have lunch every day. Schedule it. Even if you start with 10 minutes.
Okay.
And then the second task is to figure out what the hell you like to do, what soothes you, whether it's running, whether it's music, whether it's listening to a podcast, whether it's reading a book, whether it's talking on the phone to your girlfriend, whether it's giving yourself a facial or soaking in a tub, whatever that is, find something that works and schedule the time to do it. Now I'm going to ask you a question because I'm much better at this.
Sure.
So speaking of somebody who has a very busy, fast-paced, stressful life, because that's what, number one, owning your own business breeds. That's what family law breeds. That's what having a large family breeds. Where is your self-care?
There is none.
Yeah.
There's not. It's funny because we talk about this a lot. People ask what my hobbies are, and I just stare at them going, I don't have had a hobby. You know, 4 kids ago.
Yeah, you don't have a time for a hobby.
No, there's no hobbies. It's one of those, it's weird. Like, I get my enjoyment, like, where I have peace, honestly, is like the seminars, where I can just talk and answer questions, but not have it tied to a thing I have to do.
Right. You're not responsible for that case.
I'm not responsible for that case. Maybe not yet, right? Like, so it's coming, but like, I can just tell people without sounding, like, I can just tell them what to do without telling them what to do. Like, here's the scenario, here are the steps, have a great day. And then I'm done. Like, I don't need to know the details of their case because we're all just educating hypothetical scenarios. But I enjoy that. And I think those Saturdays are my kind of zen moments I don't have anybody I have to answer to. Like, I don't have the kid yelling. My wife's dealing with that at home. It is what it is. I get 3 hours. I don't have anyone in the office. So no one asking me anything there. I don't have clients at the table. I just have people that want to hear, how do they move to the next step? And it's just like a classroom.
You're having a conversation. You're using your skill set, but nobody's pulling on you. And you're not responsible for anything except having a conversation and doing what you do best in that moment.
Yeah, I think that that's it. So like, if we did more seminars, well, my wife would be pissed if we did more seminars. But if we did more seminars, that's the stuff that I'm comfortable and calming at. Because I don't have to prepare. I don't have to do anything. I just
exist. No, it flows with you.
And discuss things that happen and go through them. I mean, it's the same seminar we've given for 12 years. Like, at this point, I don't need to be in the room to give it. I don't need to look at, like, you don't need to just talk. And that kind of stuff is where I'm at peace. And then answering questions where you have to use your brain, but kind of with almost no risk, which is kind of just nice alternative where it's, you're not billing anybody. So it doesn't have to be like the most efficient answer possible. It's just, hey, here are a couple options and you can do these things. And you might want to even find a cheaper way to do these things because I'm not in like the billing mode. Like it just, the weird thing that I think has happened through working this job is you look at life in tiny time increments because that's how billing happens.
Right.
So like you're stuck in everything is a 6 minute window and it messes your whole brain up.
Right.
Because you're at home and you're looking at ways to be more efficient with how you're walking around the house, how you're driving kids to school, hell, all this stuff. And you're getting frustrated when people aren't doing that. But it's because normal people don't do that. You don't think that way. You don't.
And you're losing the present moment.
And you're losing the present moment. And that kind of stuff is just like, you know, that stuff's hard when you're just like, man, I wish you could kind of turn it off. And that's the part where, you know, self-care for any attorneys out there, if you figure out how to turn it off, let me know.
Right.
Because the best I can do is put my phone down and turn off, you know, emails.
It is, you have to, number one, find the time in your schedule. Make the time, not find it. Make it. I don't care if you have to get up 30 minutes earlier. Figure that piece out.
Yep.
Figure out what works to soothe you and practice. It doesn't come easy. Nothing comes easy. It's not going to be normal.
Yeah.
But you say the seminars give you peace and responding to stuff like that. I can completely relate because that's what podcasts are for me.
I enjoy
asking questions. I love learning about people, just having a conversation that is, you know, not responsible. It's enjoyment. It's inspirational. It's educational. Mm-hmm. Maybe to some people, it makes them feel less alone. But I'm doing this because I choose to.
Yes.
Not because somebody's asked me to or I had to. And that makes a big difference.
That does. That's fair.
Yeah. Okay, good. This piece is over.
Good. This piece is over. Lori's so happy.
Lori's happy. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have been through. Life is hard. You know, the best you can do is surround yourself with people who support you and be a little bit easier on yourself and not feel like you have to do everything alone because those people will support you, but you got to let them. And try and find present moments that make you happy, Steve. And not look at life as 6 minute increments. And, you know, we just all do the best that we can. And so hopefully somebody can relate or take a piece from this or if they need coaching in any area. It's not a, you know, it's as needed. If you need it for 3 weeks, great. If you need one session, great. If you need it for 6 months, great. It's tailored to the client's needs. And those are, for people, I think, ever changing.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And so with that, I think we're going to say goodbye and we'll be back again next week for another episode of I Do, I Did, I Don't.
See you guys later.
Take care.